Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up, has President Trump committed acts that amount to impeachable offenses? We'll talk with an historian about that topic in a few minutes. Also, what can be done about gun violence? We'll talk with some members of the Florida League of Women Voters, which has made reducing gun violence one of its top issues. But first, two listener comments about yesterday's show. Yesterday, we talked about the decline of the middle class in the U.S., and I mentioned the news reports that 11 years ago, Donald Trump allegedly had a year-long affair with a porn star. An attorney for the president sent out a letter this week on behalf of the porn star in which she denies having that affair. After the show, here's what two listeners had to say.
In regards to your show yesterday about robots taking over most of the jobs in the United States and most part of the world eventually, I heard a great saying years and years ago called, find a need and fill it. So if you're being replaced by a drone and used to deliver boxes or used to work in a factory where you're on an assembly line or somewhere in the company, learn, and robots or automations coming in, learn a trade. Go and learn pneumatics or mnemonics or whatever that term is called for lines under pressure, electronics, and then repair the suckers. So basically, the term is find a need and fill it. Look forward, not backwards. Live in the moment. Look at what was in the past, and you can base that what's going to go on in the future. Have a nice day. Bye.
This is Elizabeth in Riverview. And concerning your program of today, you were talking about why in the world did the lawyer send a letter denying this business, Trump's lawyer? Well, it has to do with billing. I worked for a lawyer some 40 years ago, and it was about $15 per letter then. God knows what they charge for a letter now. But it doesn't matter. You send a letter, it can be the stupidest thing in the world, but you get to charge that charge on the bill. That's my excuse for having sent letters, and I expect it's still the same. Mail a letter, bill them for it.
Couple of listener comments about yesterday's program. This Tuesday at 5:30 p.m., there will be a panel discussion at the Children's Board in Ybor City to discuss ways to prevent gun violence. And two of the people that are organizing the event are with us right now. Patty Brigham is the first vice president of the League of Women Voters of Florida. She co-chairs the Florida Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence, which the League formed in the days following the 2016 Pulse nightclub massacre. And also, Sandra Sroka is president of the League of Women Voters of Hillsborough County. The Hillsborough League has one of its top five priorities, gun violence prevention, and she's a charter member of the Florida Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence. And Patty and Sandra, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Great to be here.
So, Sandra, let's start with you. What's going on Tuesday?
Well, on Tuesday, we're having one of our programs that's been organized by our gun safety committee locally, and the topic is Ballots, Not Bullets, How Florida Voters Can Influence Gun Safety. It's a panel discussion with five very esteemed local community leaders that will be talking about different aspects of gun violence prevention and gun safety. People like Andrew Warren, our state attorney, representative from Tampa PD, Lieutenant Yvette Flynn, Patty, whom is also on the line, will be speaking about some of the latest legislative of the key issues, and of course, Dr. Kathleen Heide, who is a professor of criminology at USF. The public is welcome to attend. Our purpose is to, one, get information out to the public about what are the issues, what are some of the ways perhaps we can look at gun safety and prevention of gun violence. And we're going to end the program. The program's being moderated by Ernest Hooper. We're going to end the program with the opportunity for citizens to take action. And there will actually be postcards available for those who attend and wish to write a note to the legislators, particularly the legislators that are on the committees that deal with some of these gun-related bills, and be able to send those postcards off to them with their thoughts and feelings about the different legislation.
Is there legislation being considered in Tallahassee having to do with guns?
Yes. There was a lot last year, and there are several bills out there, some that have already come out and probably others that will. Patty stays on top of that on a day-to-day basis, so she can give you the details of some of those.
Okay, well, Patty, let's switch it over to you. What is the legislature considering this year when it comes to guns?
Well, the Senate Judiciary Committee took up, actually, they only took up one bill, although two were agended. Both of these bills we oppose very strongly. The bill that was taken up yesterday in the committee hearing, SB 1048 by Senator Dennis Baxley out of Baker County, would allow designated concealed carry weapons holders to take their firearms onto church and synagogue and religious institution property. And that also opens up campuses, because if a religious institution rents public school property, that means that the gun owner could carry onto that property. So we've seen a similar version of this bill. It was killed in that same committee in December. Now it's back with different wording, but it's essentially the same bill. And that bill was heard yesterday for 5 minutes, because it was only given a five-minute hearing, because the conclusion of the committee came up at noon, and the bill was heard at 5 of noon. So testimony was interrupted, and the bill will be on the agenda. We're not sure when, but it will be taken up again. The other bill, Senate Bill 1242 by Senator Greg Stube out of the Sarasota area, is the most radical gun bill we have ever seen. It would allow people to openly carry their guns without a permit in Florida. And this is a very dangerous bill. We're very concerned about it, and we have been very active with our members, driving calls and visits into Tallahassee, and there's a lot of opposition to this bill. It was not heard yesterday, so we don't know if it's going to reappear or not. And then we have the coalition has an assault weapons ban proposal that we had last year. Senator Linda Stewart out of Orlando and Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, also out of Orlando, are the sponsors of this bill that would ban semi-automatic assault weapons and large-capacity magazines. The bills have been sent to committees where the chairs have not put them on the agenda, and we're still working to get those bills heard.
Patty, how would you characterize the legislature and its attitude towards guns in the last few years?
Well, it's interesting. We've seen a lot of gun bills. You know, we've had just a plethora last year of all kinds of airport carry, courthouse carry. You know, we had some of them again this year. But they're failing. The conversation in Tallahassee has changed, especially with the formation of the coalition. There's a conversation on the side of gun safety now, and the NRA is not going unchallenged. So we're seeing a lot of these radical bills like campus carry, open carry, airport carry fail time and time again.
We're talking with Patty Brigham, who is with the Florida League of Women Voters. She's the co-chair of the Florida Coalition to Prevent Gun Violence. And also here is Sandra Sroker, who is president of the League of Women Voters of Hillsborough County. And we're talking about their position on guns. So, Sandra, why did the League of Women Voters decide that now is the time to take up gun violence prevention as one of its top issues?
Well, it has been an issue for quite a while, and with the prevalence of what is happening and the impact of gun violence on children and family and health issues, the how much it costs hospitals each year to treat individuals who are injured as a result of gun violence. So in following the leadership steps of the State League of Women Voters, we also put it as one of our priorities. And we have been trying to work with local officials, for example, the state attorney's office, and I believe that this will be discussed Tuesday evening at the program, has just recently initiated a new measure to help address the issue of domestic violence, because a lot of, I believe it's over 70% of domestic violence that occurs has to do with the use of a gun within perpetrating that violence. So they will be discussing what this new initiative is and how they hope it will help deal with that particular issue.
Because the state attorney in Florida, who's going to be one of the speakers on Tuesday's panel, has, or at least one of his representatives is going to be there.
Actually, he will be there.
Andrew Warren will be there. He wants to really, you know, if somebody is accused of domestic violence, he wants them to give up their gun rights, at least until the measure, you know, at least until whatever crime they allegedly committed, at least until it's adjudicated and they find out whether or not the person's guilty or innocent.
That's correct. And there, for those who have been adjudicated guilty, there are measures in place to remove guns from the premises from that individual and not allow that individual to carry or get a gun. But there is nothing in place, or there has not been anything in place before to more stringently try to get that gun removed from the perpetrator involved in that domestic violence dispute. And this new initiative hopes to address that in a more purposeful and meaningful manner.
Patty and Sandra, I want to ask you about the president. I think the president is faced with a decision about whether or not to allow, if you have a concealed weapons permit in one state, that it should be honored in another state. I think that's one of the ideas that's been presented to President Trump. Is that correct? And what do you think that would result in?
Well, the concealed carry reciprocity bill, it would open up the states to allow a permit from another state. And it would also open it up. 10 states in our country right now do not require a permit to carry concealed weapons. So it would also open up that. I mean, you know, say, for example, someone in another state that doesn't have to have a permit to come into Florida. Florida is already a reciprocity state, so we already accept concealed weapons permits from other states. But this is a bill that there's a lot of concern about. It could make it very dangerous when you have people walking around who, say, for example, are from one of the permitless carry states with guns. That bill passed the U.S. House of Representatives. It has not yet been heard in the Senate.
Okay, so it hasn't gotten to the president's desk yet.
It hasn't even passed the Senate yet.
You know, is it fair to say that there's a divide? I mean, you know, some people live in rural communities, and guns are a part of life in many rural communities. And but these days, many of us live in cities, and we're concerned about the neighbors or somebody down the street shooting a gun off, maybe celebrating New Year's Eve, or maybe just in the case of domestic violence, shooting their spouse, or and maybe that bullet goes out and travels through the house and injures somebody else too. I mean, there's a real divide between rural and urban areas, isn't there, on this issue of guns?
I think there is. And, you know, America's landscape has changed. We don't have as many rural areas. Hunting was once, you know, a very common activity. But with the shrinking of the rural areas, we're now having, you know, lots of guns in cities where, you know, they're far more dangerous. And as Sandra was pointing out about the domestic violence issue, when there's a gun in the home, women are five times more likely to be shot in a domestic violence dispute. So we not only have these, you know, mass shootings that grab all of the headlines and they're horrific, but we also have these everyday domestic violence shootings that, you know, with some common sense legislation could be prevented.
And I think that sometimes there is a misperception, but it is not that our league opposes individuals to legitimately own guns, but that there is a need to expand the mandate for background gun checks, as Patty was saying, for reasonable gun legislation to help reduce or prevent the extent of gun violence that we see, as well as the measure and the bill that she was talking about that the representative from Orlando is trying to sponsor on the assault rifles, large gun magazine, ownership of large gun magazines, that, you know, are these really necessary for individuals who use their guns for hunting or other recreational means?
Do you think things are changing in Tallahassee, or because for years the NRA has had its way in Tallahassee and has been able to restrict local gun ordinances that might be tougher than what Tallahassee would want? For years, the NRA has won battle after battle in Tallahassee. Patty, what would you say is going on up there? And with the changes in Tallahassee, I mean, some legislators have left Tallahassee in the last few months over scandals. Do those changes make it give more power to the NRA or less power to the NRA?
Well, the fact is, since 2015, the gun bills that have been introduced, like the campus carry bill, open carry bills, have not been, they've either been blocked because a senator took them off the agenda, or they have had a fair hearing, as was this past December when the religious school carry bill was heard, the courthouse carry bill was heard. They were heard in committee and they were voted down. So we have seen a change in the conversation in Tallahassee. The National Rifle Association, the gun lobby, is no longer going unopposed. There is a very different climate up there now when it comes to gun bills. They know that there's not going to be an easy passage of these bills, and in fact, we haven't seen any significant pro-gun bill passed for several years.
And with Jack Latvala leaving, did he make a difference either way when it came to gun bills?
Not well. If he did, it was behind the scenes. But no, the committees that heard those bills, he was not on those committees, and he did not vote.
Okay. Well, Sandra, tell us again what's happening on Tuesday.
Okay. Tuesday is, excuse me, a program, a panel program, again, Ballots Not Bullets. It's free and open to the public. The program is going to be held at the Children's Board in Ybor City between 5:30 and 7:30 in the evening, starting off with signing in and then the panel opportunity for questions from the audience and the action postcards. We do request an RSVP, and if I might be able to give you the RSVP information.
Yeah, that would be okay.
Okay, it is, I'm looking at it just to make sure I get it right. To RSVP, send your RSVP to RSVP at hclwvasinvictor.org. And that will go to our local league representative who is accepting the RSVPs, so we can check you in when you arrive. And we are filling up, but we still have space, and We would love to have everyone come and participate in this conversation.
And Ernest Hooper of the Tampa Bay Times will be moderating it. Patty, you'll be presenting there along with Andrew Warren, the state attorney in Hillsborough County. Patty Brigham and Sandra Sroka, thank you so much for coming on WMNF.
Thank you, and thank you for having us and giving us this opportunity.
Yes, thank you.
Great to have you here. And Sandra, what's the website for the League of Women Voters?
The website for the League of Women Voters is www.hclwv.org.
All right. I take it that's Hillsborough County League of Women Voters. Sandra and Patty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Patty Brigham and Sandra Sroka are both with the League of Women Voters of Florida and Hillsborough County. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa, and that event takes place in Tampa's Ybor City at the Children's Board, which is at 1002 East Palm Avenue, this Tuesday at 5:30. Well, President Trump is marking the one-year anniversary in office this weekend. The year has been marked by ongoing controversies, including further revelations about his ties to Russia both before and after the election. Plus, the president's businesses continue to make money from his travel and from entities wanting a closer relationship with the Trump administration. For these and other reasons, our next guest says there's cause to remove President Trump from office. The guest is Alan Lichtman. He's a distinguished professor of history at American University. His book, The Case for Impeachment, is just out in paperback. He's also well known for his prediction last year that Donald Trump would win the presidential election, or 2 years ago he predicted that. He made that prediction at a time when the polls and many political analysts were saying that Trump would lose the election. I spoke with Alan Lichtman yesterday.
In regards to your show yesterday.
Alan Lichtman, welcome to WMNF. Great to have you here. I want to ask you about the president's business dealings. Is the president, since he took office, making money, and is some of that money that he's making, some of his vast business enterprises, are they making money based on people wanting to get close to the Trump administration?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question that people are flocking to his D.C. International Hotel as a means of currying favor to the presidency. And we know that the membership fee at his exclusive Mar-a-Lago hotel, where he seems to log more time than at the White House, doubled from $100,000 to $200,000. And the only plausible explanation for that is this is a chance for the rich and powerful to hobnob with the president of the United States.
Now, is that a violation of the Constitution? What does the Constitution say about the president making money from people who want to curry his favor?
Well, the Constitution says a couple of things. First of all, there is something called the Foreign Emoluments Clause, which says that a president can't take anything of value from foreign governments or their agents. Clearly, he is in violation of the Foreign Emoluments Clause because he is getting things like trademarks and concessions from foreign governments where his businesses are involved. And that is a consequence of his not divesting, being the only president not to divest himself of his holdings or put him in a true blind trust. And, of course, he is making money domestically and violating something that nobody knows about. It's called the Domestic Emoluments Clause, which says if you're the president, and this relates only to the president, you cannot take anything but your salary from any governmental entity, the U.S. government, state, or local governments. And clearly, how is he getting his D.C. hotel from which he's making all this money? He's getting it through a lease from the General Services Administration. That is a violation, I believe, of the Domestic Emoluments Clause of the Constitution.
And that very lease itself about his new hotel at the old U.S. Post Office building there in Washington, D.C., just signing that lease, did that get into any sort of hot water?
I think so. I think it is a violation of the Domestic Emoluments Clause, which was designed to avoid these kinds of conflicts of interest. He is kind of both the landlord as the head of the U.S. government, right, that holds the lease, and the tenant as the recipient of that lease. And, aside from legalities of it, which I think are very important. The reason the framers were concerned with this is they did not want the national interest to be subordinated to a president's personal, private, economic interest. They don't want the American people to have to guess where the national interest leaves off and the president's personal economic interests kicks in. Even with the tax bill, the president had to lie to the American people and say, oh, this tax bill really hurts me, when every independent analysis suggests the only issue is, will this tax bill save the president and his family tens of millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars?
So who would it be up to if these are violations of the intent of the founders of the U.S., the writers of the Constitution, who would it be up to either file a criminal charge, or is impeachment the only remedy? What are the remedies if these are true violations of the original intent of the Constitution?
I think they are, and I don't think, you know, the proper remedy is a criminal charge. I think the proper remedy is impeachment. A violation of the Constitution is impeachable. And remember, impeachment is not a strictly legal process. The framers advisedly put impeachment not in the courts, but in political bodies. The U.S. House, by majority vote, has the sole authority to impeach. And then the Senate, by a two-thirds vote, has the sole authority to remove a president. And there is no appeal to the courts from either one of these decisions.
Well, that makes it a political decision. So if it's a Republican-controlled Congress, in all likelihood, they're going to vote in favor of the president every time. If it's a Democratic Congress, they're going to vote against the president every time. Would that be fair to say?
No, I don't think so. In Watergate, you had articles of impeachment, three of them voted by the House Judiciary Committee, and then Richard Nixon resigned because he was certain to be impeached by the full House and removed by the U.S. Senate. More than one-third of the Republicans in the House Judiciary Committee voted for at least one articles of impeachment, and the Republican leadership told Richard Nixon that if this got to the floor of the House, lots of Republicans would vote to impeach. And if this got to the Senate, enough Republicans would vote to convict, so you'd be removed. That's why Richard Nixon resigned. Now, that was a different time, and maybe Republicans would not at this time put patriotism above party. But I think a lot of it depends upon what we find out from the special counsel, Robert Mueller.
All right, then.
We know the tip of the iceberg of what Mueller knows at this point.
Well,
and if what Mueller comes up with, which could involve financial crimes, could involve crimes involving the Russia connection, is shocking enough, and I think it will be, then you could get Republicans to move on impeachment. Or if they don't, there'll likely be a change in party power in the House, and you won't need Republicans to impeach.
In the new version of your book, the paperback version, in your introduction, you have an extended discussion about the Russian involvement in the Trump campaign. The president has continually said there's no collusion with Russia. He had no business dealings with Russia. You point out that the opposite is true. But could it be said that these events happened before the president took office, and therefore they don't rise to the impeachment level?
Great question. And I think that, some scholars have claimed that, and I think they're dead wrong. First of all, there is nothing in the Constitution that imposes a time limit on impeachment. There's nothing in the debates in the Constitutional Convention that suggests that. Moreover, if we're talking about conspiring with the Russians to rig an election, that is an event that directly and immediately impacts the presidency, perhaps even compromising the president, and therefore is directly relevant to his governing the country. Think of the absurdity of the position taken by those who say we can't impeach unless it occurred after the inauguration. Imagine a president who gets elected by getting a contract with the mafia to bump off his opponent, and that only becomes known after the inauguration. Are you suggesting he couldn't be impeached for that? Of course he could. And certainly he could be impeached for conspiring with the Russians to get himself elected.
Alan, one last question. You correctly predicted that President Trump would win. If the election were held today, based on your criteria that you've predicted every election for several decades now correctly, based on your criteria now, would President Trump win if the election were held this November?
Yeah, it's too early because my criteria have to do with the governing of the country, and there's still a lot of governing yet to be done. But let me say this. You know, just because Trump has low approval ratings doesn't mean that if he survived impeachment and survived a nomination contest that he would necessarily lose in 2020. That's false. It really depends upon what happens during the course of the country in foreign policy, in the economy, what happens with this scandal, the big picture of governance, not the small picture of polls. So I think the pundits who are writing him off, just as they wrote him off before the last election, are wrong.
So Democrats shouldn't take cheer by what's going on right now?
Well, I think they could take some cheer, although I think no one should take cheer who cares about the country. But I think we should not presume that if he survives impeachment, that Trump is necessarily a loser in 2020. And with respect, generally, I think the Democrats have to understand they can't just depend on anti-Trumpism. They need better leadership, younger leadership, and a much better message of their own.
Alan Lichtman, thank you so much for coming on. If you're ever in Florida, stop by WMNF.
Would love to. Take care, Rob.
Thanks. Thanks, Alan. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's Alan Lichtman, who is a distinguished professor of history at American University in Washington, D.C., and his book, The Case for Impeachment, is just out in paperback. As you heard there, Alan thinks that there is a case to remove President Trump from office. Let's open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number here at WMNF at 88.5 FM, here's the phone number. It's 813-239-9663. A lot of people like to send in emails, too. And if you send in an email with the complete sentences, I'm more likely to read it. And especially if there's three or four good sentences, I'm very likely to read it. I try to read them all as they come in. Sometimes if it's just fractions of sentences and I have a hard time understanding what you're saying, I might skip over that email. It's not because I don't want to read your email, just because sometimes it just doesn't make sense to read a fraction of a sentence. So here's our email address. It's dj@wmnf.org. So I'm going to suggest some other stories. We can talk about both gun safety and the case for impeachment. We can talk about those issues if you want. Frank Knox is one of our phone producers today, I know. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. We're going to get the latest update in a few minutes when we get the NPR news. But this is what we know so far about that possible shutdown. A bitterly divided Congress is hurtling toward a government shutdown tonight at midnight in a partisan standoff over demands by Democrats for a solution on the legislation to protect about 700,000 younger immigrants from being deported, the so-called Dreamers. Democrats in the Senate have served notice that they will filibuster the short-term, four-week government-wide funding bill that passed the House last night. Republicans controlling the Senate argue that Democrats are holding the entire government hostage over demands to protect the Dreamer immigrants. And so that controversy is still going on. They haven't solved the problem yet. President Trump will mark the first anniversary of his inauguration tomorrow night with a celebration at his Mar-a-Lago resort in South Florida. Tickets starting at $100,000 for a couple. That amount, according to the invitation, will pay for dinner and a photograph with the president. For $250,000, a couple can also take part in a roundtable discussion with the president. Well, last summer, President Trump told a cheering Cuban-American crowd in South Florida that he was rolling back some of President Obama's opening to Cuba in order to starve the island's economy of U.S. tourism dollars and ratchet up pressure for regime change. Well, that doesn't appear to be happening. Travel to Cuba is booming from dozens of countries, including the U.S. Cuban government figures show 2017 was a record year for Cuba tourism, with 4.7 million visitors pumping more than $3 billion into the island's economy. The number of American travelers was at 619,000 last year, many of them coming from Tampa. A top manager who supervises the Environmental Protection Agency program responsible for cleaning up the nation's most contaminated properties and waterways told Congress yesterday that the government needs to come up with a plan for the ongoing threat posed to Superfund sites from climate change. the testimony by EPA Principal Deputy Assistant Administrator Barry Breen before House Oversight Committee conflicts with the EPA's policy positions under President Trump. Trump has called climate change a hoax. Breen's boss, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt, is an ardent fossil fuel promoter who questions the validity of mainstream climate change. There are more than 1,300 Superfund sites across the U.S. Under the Obama administration, the EPA issued a robust plan for prioritizing cleanup and protection of toxic sites located in flood zones in areas that are vulnerable to climate change. And it's cooler than normal here in the Tampa Bay area, but in Alaska, winter is off to a late start. And Alaska is usually the country's coldest state. Months of higher than normal temperatures in parts of rural Alaska have opened dangerous holes in the ice on frozen rivers. Residents use frozen rivers to travel from village to village and to hunting grounds since there are no roads in many parts of rural Alaska, but now they're unable to do even that because it's too warm in Alaska. The unseasonable warm in parts of Alaska is a factor making last month the warmest December on record for that entire state. Let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663, and our email address, dj@wmnf.org. We're going to go to John in Port Richey. Hey, John, you're on. What would you like to comment about?
Thanks for the show. Couple of things. One, I wasn't quite sure what your guest was talking about with the gun laws. Was that a federal law that they wanted to pass that would create, what's that called, reciprocity across the state? So if Florida said, you don't need absolutely anything to openly carry, you can go to any other state and that law has to be abided by?
Yeah, Congress is currently considering that. It's, as they said, it's made its way through the House. Now it's future in the Senate. We don't know what's going to happen with it. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of makes me wonder. It's like, I thought one of the fundamental, I guess I must be wrong, because I thought that one of the fundamental principles of conservatism was individual state rights. But it seems like that really doesn't hold true when it comes to, I guess, individual liberties. I guess that's where they're coming from, is that states don't deserve to have their independence when it comes to when they want to override somebody else's liberties. I'm not quite sure on that.
Well, I think it's fair to say that many conservatives who believe in owning guns think that gun rights are the preeminent right that Americans have. They don't think that other...
I understand. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. And the other thing about the passing of the funding, I'm confused on that, too, because I thought under the sequester ruling back in, 2011, you couldn't filibuster a spending bill. And that's what the Republican used to try to push through the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. That's what they used to push through the tax bill because they only needed 50 votes. So I don't understand why they wouldn't need just 50 votes in the Senate, and therefore they have the power to do it. So it's really not the Democrats' fault because one Democrat or two Democrats, or I think they said they needed 9 Democrats, won't vote for it. So the Democrats are being blamed for that. I don't quite understand that either.
Yeah, I think they need 60 votes to pass the measure that's under consideration.
Would be a filibuster.
Yeah, exactly.
The president's going to sign it, so
right.
I'm not sure why the filibuster applies to this when it's a funding bill.
Well, that's a good question, and I don't have the answer for it, and maybe one of our listeners does know, so let me ask them.
Thanks.
All right, John, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gina in Brandon. Hi, Gina. You're on WMNF.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the looming government shutdown. First of all, I don't see why the Democrats should cave in. The president said he's going to support a DACA program. Then he says he's not going to. Then he says he is going to. Then he says he's not going to. You know, they made an agreement. They crafted a compromise that everybody could live with, and now he's jumped off the ship again. And it's just, you know, it's just time to say enough is enough. This is something that they've agreed on for a while, and I hope the Democrats stick to their guns, because it seems like that's all they do is cave in. And if my memory serves me correctly, wasn't it the Republicans who were threatening the government shutdown a few years ago? Under President Obama?
Yeah, there was a government shutdown when the Tea Party was really powerful in 2013.
Yeah, that was the Republicans saying, well, we want what we want, what we want, and we're gonna hold the government hostage. I think that these things, the whatever you want to call it, the program for the Dreamers, Amnesty, whatever, I think that is a very worthy cause. And I hope that they you know, stick to their guns and not say, you know, you're going to, once again, you know, the Republicans, they've got the majority leadership positions, but they're really a minority when it comes to people's support, the people in this country, the voter support of the Dreamer Act. So that's just my take on it. As far as, like, having to, you know, having the filibuster, I think that is, and I could be wrong, but I believe that that is the normal rule that would apply, that not having to filibuster is the exception. I mean, if I'm understanding it correctly, you had a previous caller who asked that, why are they able to filibuster? I believe that that is the normal process of things. The straight 50% vote is an exception the Republicans carved out to get some things they wanted passed, because they wanted passed under George Bush. Memory serves me. Thank you.
Okay, Gina, thanks a lot. I think Gina's first point is really a good one. And that is that the president seems to be on all sides of many issues. And at one point last week, in that televised hour-long discussion about immigration, he said, I think we can reach a bipartisan bill on immigration. And this spending bill that they're stuck on right now only gets the government 4 more weeks of time, and then they're going to have to come back and maybe face another government shutdown. So this isn't by any means a permanent solution to the problem or a long-term solution to the problem. But I think the fact that the president seems to be all over the map on the issues, depending on who he's talking to, which cameras are on, which cameras are off, the president is hard to figure out. It's hard to figure out what he really stands for. And I don't know if you would agree, but the president seems to, you know, for instance, on the issue of being tough on China, you know, he was going to crack down on Chinese currency violations. We know that China gave his daughter a favorable ruling when it came to some Trump products that were being were seeking licenses in China. We know that China went after some investigators who were sent by the grassroots U.S. groups into China to inspect Chinese factories, so they were arrested. These were Trump factories in China. And depending on, you know, what the president is doing at on any given day, sometimes he's tough on China, talks tough on China, and sometimes he backs away and says, oh, China's doing a great job. What do you think? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. In a similar fashion, I'm not sure I understand what the president's position is, because he seems to have shown some understanding that if you're a child and you were brought here by your parents as a dreamer, that you didn't have any decision. Your parents decided to come over. You were part of the family. You came over with them, but you were a minor. The president seemed to have some understanding that, these are not, you know, people that deliberately violated U.S. territorial lines. So let's take some phone calls again. We're going to go to Levi in Clearwater. Levi in Clearwater.
Hello.
Hi. Did I get your name right?
Levi.
Levi. Okay, Levi. What's on your mind?
Yes, love your show. I think a lot of your viewers may think that you have to pass a background check in order to buy a firearm from a federally licensed firearm dealer. And it's not true. Are you familiar with this, Rob?
You know, I why don't you tell us? So tell us what your expertise is, and then I'll make a comment.
You have to submit to a test, a background check test, and the firearms dealer submits the application for you, when you attempt to purchase a firearm from that dealer. If you're not discovered to be ineligible to buy a firearm within 3 days by the FBI, then the firearm dealer is legally allowed to sell the firearm. So they don't have to wait for a yes. They just have to wait 3 days for the FBI to tell them, no, you can't sell the gun. Now, what happens, and there's about 4,000 guns per year sold in this situation, and what that's called is a default proceed sale of a firearm. And after this firearm is sold to a person who is ineligible to buy it, they send in the ATF to try to track down that gun that was sold to an ineligible buyer. And this is how Dylan Roof acquired his gun legally and used it to kill all those people in that Charleston church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
default proceed sale. And think about how much money spent by the ATF trying to track down these guns that should have never been sold. Now, there's legislation in Congress right now called the Background Check Completion Act. They started this right after the Charleston incident, and they've been trying to get it passed. And what it simply says is, as a firearm dealer, you have to get a completed background check before you proceed with a sale. That's it.
Well, that seems pretty reasonable.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think everybody thinks that's the way it is, when it's not.
When it's not, that if the government has a backlog, if it doesn't do the work in 3 days, then the person gets the gun.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I think it took them, I want to say 60 days, or maybe it was 30 days, to discover that Mr. Roof acquired his gun in this manner. So there's obviously a backlog, and with the huge escalation of firearm sales in the country, it's to be expected. But I think that this is one of the misleading things that people think about the way that firearms are sold in this country. And obviously the burden of proof is on the government to prove that this person is ineligible, and that would be a major step to switch this around by putting the burden of proof on the applicant. Who wants to buy the gun? That's the big issue.
All right.
And what I think really doesn't matter, but I think that obviously that if I have to pass it, I'm going to pass it instantly. 90% of the people who take those tests, they pass or fail instantly. It's the other 10% that don't, that get to buy a gun under these circumstances. So this guy, who's applying for a gun, he probably doesn't pass because he's not passing instantly. But he only has to wait 3 days to go get his gun.
Yeah. Well, Levi, it's a good point. Thanks for making it.
Good day.
All right. Thanks. Adam writes this. He says, I want to be clear to everyone that a clean children's health insurance bill could have been put on the floor any time during the past few months by Republicans, and it would have passed with overwhelming support. Why didn't they do that? Because they want to use children as a bargaining chip. That's Adam's email out there. And then 813 Anonymous, actually Charles in Tampa writes, the answer to John's question about the filibuster is that Republicans seem to feel that the rules do not apply to them and nothing is ever their fault. That's Charles writing from Tampa. Amin says this, does the government shutdown include the paychecks of the regime employees? That's a good question. I know that Social Security checks are safe. If you're in the military, I think your paycheck is safe. If you're a civilian contractor for the military, I don't think your check is safe. But I don't have that complete list in front of me. There are some good analyses on the internet that talk about what government programs will be most affected. Let's go to Betty in Sarasota. Hi, Betty. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, Rob. Yeah, there are so many topics to talk about. The gun issue is something that just confounds me at any given point because, if you talk to people around the world, they just cannot believe how pervasive the whole thing of guns is. We're so obsessed with this. But that's one thing. And then another thing that really perplexes me is that why many TV anchors, even people like Anderson Cooper and all these others, I watch CNN a lot. And occasionally, of course, I go to, Fox so-called News to see what they're up to. But no one is putting heat on Trump when he talks about making America great again, which of course is code for let's take away the black man's vote, you know, black power, especially when Obama was in. Why aren't people saying, hey, Donald Trump, why aren't you making America great again by bringing back all your factories from Turkey and China and probably 10 other countries?
Well, that is a good question. David Letterman famously asked him that question a few years ago and asked him why your ties are made in China, and Trump didn't have a good answer.
Exactly. All he did was shrug. I remember that. That was wonderful. No one else has done it before or since. I remember that. So, yeah, it's just there's so much to talk about. But I see this country, particularly this administration, completely off the rails with any sense of decency. It's just appalling. It's so scary. Everybody I know is just completely hopelessly depressed about what's going on. So, but, you know, I do believe that in response to the way he's conducted himself and the fact that he has no soul, no heart, and no, just absolutely no knowledge of how the world runs, that he's completely and utterly dependent on people around him. And I think there are so many, operatives, you know, vying for their own power and their own voice to be heard, that he's probably totally confused by now. And he has absolutely, I don't think he trusts anybody. And then you have John Kelly, and then you had Bannon, and whom can he trust and whom can he listen to? Who are these people?
I think Betty, he does trust Fox News. So if Fox News were to broadcast something that was accurate and fair, I think the president would act in a more straightforward, honest fashion. Unfortunately, I was watching Fox News the other day, and they were getting the story about immigration reform so wrong, implying that all the Dreamers were criminals. And it was really hard to watch Fox. And if that's the message that the president was getting, God help us all. Betty, thanks a lot.
No kidding. You're so welcome. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Ben in Tampa. Ben, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, morning. Not sure if anybody covered it yet, but listening to the discussion on gun violence sounds a whole lot like a bunch of nipping at the edges and really ignoring the elephant in the room. We're over here talking about the campus carry, talking about domestic gun violence and all that. We all know that the major gun violence, deaths, and shootings is inner-city youth, teens, whatever you want to call them, but we know who we're talking about.
Well, Ben, give us some statistics on that, because I know that that is a problem, but I wouldn't say that that's the major problem in the country.
I don't have any right at my hand, but I've seen statistics that say if we were to go and eliminate the shootings by that demographic from the statistics, our gun violence statistics would be like Belgium's.
All right. Ben, I haven't seen those statistics. I know that gun violence is prevalent in all communities. We saw that horrible thing that happened. We saw that horrible mass shooting in Texas just a few weeks ago. We've seen mass shootings all over the country, and most of those mass shootings have not happened in inner city. So if you got some statistics, I think you should call us back. Is that okay? Hey, Ben, if you've got statistics, call us back. Could you do that?
Can I email them to you?
Yeah. Just email them to rob@wmnf.org. I'll take a look at them.
I'll do that.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Bye.
All right. Good to hear from you. Kevin writes this: If the people who are opposed to illegal immigration could trace their own roots far back far enough, would they find that their own relatives would have been forbidden from entry to the USA if today's standards were in place back then? Xenophobia always rears its ugly head throughout our history. Yeah, there was several interesting articles about President Trump's grandfather who emigrated to the U.S. From Germany, and the reasons why he left Germany. One of the reasons was that there was a lack of freedom in that country, and also Trump's grandfather didn't like some of the rules there, so he was leaving. Among the rules that he didn't like was that there was a draft in Germany. So people often leave for political reasons from countries to come here, and we honored all those immigrants for decades and decades, and now suddenly we're saying to people from El Salvador who are leaving for political and other reasons, they can't come here. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'll play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next on the Midpoint program. This is WMNF Tampa. Have a great weekend.
Live from NPR News.